Why do we have the most mental illness of all countries studied? Perhaps in spite of the rhetoric, we don't have the right early childhood experiences programmed into how society functions in the United States of America. Could it be that in spite of all the talk, we don't have family values in place? Those are strong deterrents to having good health, both mental and physical. And of course, there are other indicators of how poorly children fare in this country compared to other rich countries. We have the highest proportion of children living in poverty, the highest rates of homelessness among children, the highest rates of death from child abuse. We have twice the teen birth rate of the next closest rich country. We have the highest rates of child injury deaths. So it should be no surprise, too, that we have the highest infant mortality rate, the highest child mortality rate, and the highest youth homicide rate. We medicate our children with psychoactive drugs such as Ritalin, Zyprexia, and Paxil, and we use them more than in other countries. So what might we do to improve the outcomes for our children so they have better mental and physical health and grow into emotionally and mentally healthy adults? Public health calls this primary prevention. One thing to consider is what policies do other countries who are much healthier than we are have in place. There are only three countries in the world without a paid maternity leave policy: United States, Swaziland, a very poor African country, and Papua New Guinea, half of a large island north of Australia. We're the wealthiest country in the world, yet we have no policy that guarantees that a working mom, after she has her baby, can stay home to nurture the baby and get paid while doing so. Only a very poor African country and a poor Asian country side with us here, and that's a disgrace. Take Sweden, a very healthy country. What do they do to ensure a thriving early childhood? They mandate a full year's combined maternity and paternity leave with full pay. You have to take it, and you get your full pay from the government. If the mother takes the full year, then the father has to take 12 weeks as well. The second year is optional at 80% pay. Then if you want to go back to work, your child is put in a government-run free daycare. The requirements to work in a Swedish daycare setting is that you need a master's degree in play. That is what daycare should be about, socializing with others, and we need experts there. The only requirement for daycare workers in the United States that I'm aware of is that there be no recent history of sexual abuse of children. So we get what we pay for. Now, healthier countries don't mandate secure attachment for children, but they make it much more likely to happen than here, since there's little chance of a parent being there for the child in the U.S., especially since we undid welfare as we knew it, and we don't have a living wage policy in this country. If there are two parents in the home, they both need to work to try to make ends meet, since real wages have been stagnant for most of the last 30 years. So the price we pay for neglecting early childhood is immense. It affects us personally for the rest of our lives, and may be the reason we use psychoactive drugs to keep us under control in Brave New World. Now, because the most important part of our physical and mental health occurs before we're able to make conscious choices, such as to eat right, to exercise, to not smoke, to use a condom, there's really not much that adhering to such individual health advice can do to redress a couple of critical years at the beginning. So I've talked about early childhood and suggested we don't value it and neglect spending public funds to support good conditions early on so we have healthier lives as adults. There are also many studies looking at the impact of the gap between the rich and the poor on adult mental health. More inequality in society, a bigger discrepancy between the have too muches and have not enoughs, has been related to more mental illness. One study demonstrates the link between income distribution and mental ill health among the rich countries where the U.S. stood out as having the most mental illness. There's more stress in such societies, and the stress is concentrated on the more disadvantaged, poorer elements who can't cope and have more mental illness. But these ideas are overlooked in the United States because we're indoctrinated to believe that no matter what, no matter when, we can all pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and get over it. I no longer believe that, and there isn't evidence for that either. Now, I began talking about a period of depression I had in 1993 and how it was resolved. I then talked about studies showing how much mental illness we have in this country and how our efforts to deal with it might be making it worse. I also talked about how we characterize mental illness and pointed out that what happens to us early in life has profound effects on our health and mental stability. Now, how mental illness is seen in this country has changed, and this is transforming standards of care throughout the world. When I went to medical school in 1970, there was a joke told about the very specialties in medicine. The pathologist, you know, the doctor that does autopsies. The pathologist is the doctor that knows everything, but 2 hours too late. In other words, she finds out what the problem is after the person has died. The internist is the doctor that knows everything, but does nothing. And the surgeon is the doctor that knows nothing, but does everything. And the psychiatrist was the doctor that knows nothing and does nothing. Now, all that has changed except for the pathologist. She still knows everything, but still 2 hours too late. Internists tell me they still know everything, but now they do all sorts of invasive procedures, sticking scopes and catheters into various places. And surgeons, my colleagues tell me, have learned a great deal these days and often don't do anything. A good example is the trauma service at Harborview, where almost everyone who used to come in there with serious injuries went to the operating room when the motto was, if in doubt, cut it out. Today we've learned that just leaving you alone is better for many injuries. We used to always remove a ruptured spleen, but these days that operation is very rare. The psychiatrist has been encumbered with ideas from the DSM that almost all mental illness is a result of a chemical imbalance in the brain that needs drug therapy. So today, psychiatrists know a lot about pharmacologic psychiatry and do almost everything to treat America's ills. But when I did my rotation in psychiatry as a medical student at Stanford in 1973, I worked in a hospital ward in Palo Alto called a therapeutic community. There were a bunch of crazy people there as patients. They didn't wear hospital gowns, but ordinary clothes. And psychiatrists and others treated them there. The days were spent in various social events and community meetings. Yes, many of the patients were on drugs, but the therapy took place in various meetings in which social encounters happened and were discussed. Depression at that time was considered involutional or reactive. Involutional is a fancy word meaning coming from within, and reactive is after bad things happen to you. After medical school and further training and then working in various settings, be they hospital ERs or clinics or teaching other doctors, I was not aware that this perspective on treating mental illness had changed until I read the book The Age of Melancholy by Dr. Blaser, a professor of psychiatry at Duke University. He looked at the transition from social psychiatry to biological psychiatry that began happening in the 1970s. Once we had drugs with different side effects from the obvious movement disorders of the 1960s drugs, and appeared to acceptably control some forms of behavior, psychiatrists no longer had to do nothing. They had a pill for almost every ill. And with DSM-3, the manual telling psychiatrists how to classify illness that was out in 1980, major depression became divorced from the community and society. It was just a chemical imbalance and easy to become diagnosed with, as I found in 1993. Now, major depression is the common cold of psychiatry. While there are lots of drugs to treat it, they may not be any more effective in the long run than in how we treat the common cold. Therapeutic communities are no more. A psychiatric colleague of mine just came back from a stint in New Zealand where she worked in one of the last therapeutic communities there. They're being phased out because it's easier to just give people pills rather than pay for community therapy. Now, New Zealand is healthier than the United States, but our standards of life and medical care are penetrating everywhere, including down under. Other nations who have better mental health than we do want to emulate our sad state of how we treat illness. So to get out of this morass, we need to rethink mental as well as physical health and come to see that what happens in society matters at least as much as what the individual does. Many people diagnosed with major depression and on antidepressants are in fact having reactive depressions. They do not just have a chemical imbalance that requires soma in our brave new world pharmacocracy. Instead, they need therapeutic communities. In 1993, I had what would have once been termed a reactive depression, but I was very fortunate to have friends and a meaningful work to do, challenging work that required me to be a part of a community. And eventually, in the therapeutic community of Hill, Nepal, I got over it. I think what is responsible for much mental ill health in this country is that we are losing the capacity to be a part of stable communities and to engage in meaningful things to do. I think we need a therapeutic community, or better still, a therapeutic society. So what would today's therapeutic society look like? It has to be physical. Virtual ones won't do. I know you can have online dating and online sex, and there's less likelihood of catching herpes that way, but we need stable face-to-face, flesh-to-flesh encounters. Over the last few decades, our society has changed, so we have fewer meaningful social encounters than ever before. The ones we have often have no more depth than those where we tell people to have a nice day. Many of you who are older will recall that we didn't used to wish everyone every time, whether on the phone, in the chat room, on the street, to have a nice day. Occasionally, I sometimes tell them, thank you very much, but that isn't what I had planned. Occasionally, I want to have a miserable day so I can appreciate the next day when things are better. Are people having nice days? Evidence suggests not. We must change the structure of society by making our relationships involve community, respect, friendship, and support. You are much less likely to have those relationships with a big gap between the rich and the poor. So the key treatment today for our poor state of physical and mental health, mental well-being, will require decreasing the income gap, the upstream factor that will do the most for our health. We have many studies linking inequality to worse mental health, and of course, it tends to be the poorer people in the society who suffer the most. Why is inequality increasing almost everywhere in the world? The USA has been a leader once again in this process, and the reason goes back to the adoption of neoliberal economic theories beginning in the 1970s. The rich and powerful have only wanted one thing all throughout history, and that's everything. After the Second World War, many forms of redistribution came into being, taking from the rich and giving to the poor. Robin Hood was alive and well. Beginning around 1965 until 1980, the rich saw their total assets decline. It was a wealth crash. So they responded with a series of policies, what that's now termed neoliberal economics, that gave them ever more. Instead of Robin Hood, they incarnated Hood Robin. They told us this was best for everyone. If they got more than their share, it would be better for all of us. Now, most people in the United States think this is the way it should be, giving up what they have to the rich. A therapeutic society would bring Robin Hood back. This would extend the concept of primary prevention I mentioned earlier to primordial prevention, getting at the root causes of our society's dysfunction. But today I want you to take a smaller problem that I've spelled out and work to change that. Let the only countries in the world without a paid maternity leave policy be Papua New Guinea and Swaziland, and not the United States. Better still, we should make sure that every country in the world has a paid maternity leave policy. A small change. Let's do what Sweden does and mandate a full year's paid leave for mothers and fathers. It might take giving up some tax cuts for billionaires, but the price is worth it. So I've talked about mental health and mental illness by considering populations and societies rather than what an individual should do when she or he has a problem. People with various issues often ask me for advice. I think we need forms of support and community and meaning in our lives. I was lucky back in 1993 to have challenging work to do, that I was eager to begin even in my unwell state. Our society, this country, has exported plenty of meaningful work to China, India, and Bangladesh. The Rust Belt and depressed economies in this country attest to that. Treating depressed economies with trickle-down neoliberal economics Hood Robin politics won't work as well as Robin Hood treating society. We also used to accommodate many of those with mental illness in halfway houses, special places to stay where they had supervised activities. But in the world's richest country, we've decided to no longer fund those and have ousted their occupants onto the street, where you see many of them regularly today. So I've suggested that the studies demonstrating that the United States has the highest rates of mental illness are true, and part of the reason is our over-reliance on drugs to treat a condition that in large part results from the rules we've laid out in our society. These rules create conditions in early childhood that don't lead to emotionally stable adults. The policies create very stressful societies as well. The desire to give as much as we can to the rich, with the rest of us being satisfied with what trickles down, is the root cause. We find our lives increasingly focused on being consumers, working ourselves to death, to have more stuff that doesn't satisfy our needs for emotional support or mental health. Our Surgeon General's report on mental health echoes these ideas. Yet we vote against our interests and well-being. So America is driving us crazy. But it is we who have the power in America, and we can change this once we figure it out. It's your job, you and the audience, to verify whether what I've said is true. And if so, to work together to change the rules so we all do better. Take Orwell to heart and struggle to see what is in front of your nose. Before I end, remember, I'm a medical doctor working in a medical care system where the work I do can cause harm. I still do it in the hopes of that I can help people with their immediate problems. But I don't think what I do in the emergency department has significant long-term benefits. So for those of you here who may have mental illness or be taking treatment, I'm not suggesting you change any of that, but consider what we can do together to prevent the United States leading the world in this invisible plague. So Daniel Defoe, writing in his journal of the plague year 1722, said, "It seems that the government had a true account of it, and several councils were held about ways to prevent its coming over, but all was kept very private. Hence it was that this rumor died off again, and people began to forget it as a thing we were very little concerned in, and that we hoped was not true." I think we'd all like to hope this isn't true so we can go back home to our Soma in our brave new world. But I think we must reach out to one another and make changes to have a healthier society. Let's work together on that. Thank you.